today's study is fantastic. We have a letter written by and published. It was published in Archaeological Review. When was it published? I'm looking for, where's the date? Yeah, 1868 it was published. That's the Common Era, 1868 of the Common Era, which is about 155 years ago, something like that, if I'm doing the math right. But Jules Oppert wrote this. I translated it from French, and I published it. It's linked in several of my articles, including the Crucible article, Chapter 7. I believe it's linked there. We haven't come to that yet. But let's get to the date today. This is a remarkable article. In this letter, Mr. Jules Oppert corrects the Bible in the part we're about to read. That's why I wanted to mention this. But today is January 31st, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 1912 hours Eastern Standard Time. Ward Green with you again today. And our study is from the Crucible article, Chapter 6. Today, we missed Chapter 6, Paragraph 4 yesterday. We just missed it. I just skipped over it. The story begins, that is, the story of Apophis in the Bible, whom we identify as Apophis, but the story of the king in the Bible in the days of Moses, who was killing the young children, the Hebrew boys. The story begins with a description of this king as, quote, or a, quote, new king who did not know Joseph, unquote. And Apophis is said to have been an usurper of the throne of northern Egypt. That's something outside the Bible about Apophis, that he's said to have been an usurper of the throne of northern Egypt. And the former pharaoh was named Kayan, prior to Apophis. The ruler was, so we believe, anyway, according to all the Egyptologists, Egyptological research, Kayan was the pharaoh before Apophis, and he had designated his son Yanasi as his chosen successor of all the Hyksos rulers of those times. These are all part of the dynasty of the Hyksos. I forget the number of that dynasty in Egypt. I think it's Dynasty 16 in Egypt. I believe that's what it's called, but I can't remember what the exact number is. There's dynasties 14, 15, 16, and 17 are a little bit different in the way they're sequenced. But anyway, according to what parts of Egypt they're associated with and so on. We're not going to do all of that today, so let's just keep reading. But whatever the dynasty number is, it's the one that has Apophis in it, and Kayan in it, and Yanasi. Apophis, we should note, is also called Apepi. That's the same name, but in a different form. Apepi, so Epepi, actually, is Apophis. Apophis evidently usurped not only the throne, but he also reinscribed two monuments of Pharaoh Amenemhat II, who has been identified by us as the Pharaoh of Joseph's time. And Wikipedia used to date Amenemhat II exactly in Joseph's time in our chronology, and that's why I made that association. But if you look at the previous king, they still date the previous king in such a way that Amenemhat must be dated the way we have dated him. They can only, you know, manipulate Wikipedia so much to try to refute what we're saying, and they don't succeed in refuting it completely, usually, anyway. But they keep manipulating the Wikipedia. It's not reliable. But the sources from which it's drawn represent, you know, some other scientific viewpoint. Who has been identified Amenemhat II as the pharaoh of Joseph's time. The actions of Apophis, since he usurped the monuments of Amenemhat II, showing his little knowledge of Joseph. In other words, if he'd known that Joseph was living at the time of Amenemhat II, he would have. That doesn't mean he wouldn't have usurped the monument, but he just didn't know anything about Joseph, apparently, because he wasn't associated with the Hebrews in any way that we know of. These monuments could be in the north because the Pharaoh in Joseph's day ruled in both northern and southern Egypt. So Amenemhat II was ruling over all of Egypt. And his monuments in the north, at the time when Apophis became the ruler in northern Egypt, and only northern Egypt is where Apophis was ruling, because there was a different pharaoh ruling in the south at that time. The kingdom of Egypt was divided at that time into north and south, the delta having been ruled by the Hyksos. But we've got to keep reading. Now, it's time to keep going. But where the Bible says that this king didn't know anything about Joseph, it's interesting because we believe that this pharaoh, Amenemhat II, was ruling at the time of Joseph. In fact, it fits in the. It's mainly because of the chronology that we believe that. But, Apophis wouldn't usurp a monument if he'd known something about the pharaoh, probably. He just usurped the monument because he didn't have any monuments of his own. And he didn't know anything about this pharaoh, and therefore he didn't know anything about Joseph, and he didn't know anything about it, that prior time. But yesterday we did paragraph 5, and paragraph 6 talks about the daughter of Apophis. We'll do that tomorrow, hopefully. But let's keep going. We've used a lot of time here talking about the Crucible article. But now our proverb for today, little children, is from Proverbs chapter 24, verse 11. Deliver those who are being taken away to death, and those staggering to the slaughter, oh, may you hold them back. That's very kind advice, is it not, to try and prevent people who are dying from dying? Try to help save them from death, especially those who are, in this case, mentioned as going to be slaughtered, is what's being emphasized there. If people are going to be slaughtered for no reason, there's never a good reason to slaughter people. So we should try to deliver them. We should deliver them, as the proverb says. 2 Kings 15. Section of the book of 2 Kings, we're going to see some contradictions or some difficulties. One of which is, later on it says, in the 20th year of Jotham, who ruled for only 16 years, as we later see, and that's explained by Julius Oppert in his letter, that he wrote to a certain gentleman, and it says in the 20th year of Jotham here in verse 30. That's the verse that's wrong. The number 20 comes from one of the Hebrew letters in the text, which is translated as a number, which is valid in some cases, but in this case, Mr. Oppert does justice to the Bible by explaining what we have in our chronology also, in the book of in the article Moses part 2. Feels like a book. It's Moses part 2 in the table at the near the end where it talks about the table of kings here. Table H3 and H4, the different kings of Israel. Here the 20th year of Jotham would be 737, and that's not when Hoshea began to rule, because Hoshea began to rule 729, not 737. And there's 10 years here that we have as a problem, because we know Hoshea's reign also overlaps with Hezekiah here in the kingdom of Judah. Hezekiah was ruling at the time of Hoshea. So there's a 10-year gap here in our chronology that we show in the article Moses, part 2. And Mr. Oppert, he explains all of what happens in that time period. Another king named Menahem again took the throne, a different person. And then eventually, and then after that, Pekah became king again at the very end of this 10-year period. And he was killed by Hoshea during the second term of his office as king. That is, Pekah was killed by Hoshea. So this 10-year period is explained by Mr. Oppert just marvelously and brilliantly, when in his knowledge of Hebrew is more than adequate to explain it. It's quite something. Now, I mean, it's in the article that I link, the article that he wrote, the published letter of his that I linked, that I translated and I linked in my articles in various places. Jules Oppert, if you look up Oppert, you'll find the article linked in one of my articles somewhere. If you do a search on Google from the site wellofjehovah.com. Let's read 2 Kings, shall we? Verse 15, we still have used up 12 minutes already. In the 27th year of Jeroboam, the king of Israel, Azariah, now this is a contradiction too, and it's explained by the Insight book as that perhaps, because it wasn't the 27th year of Jeroboam when Azariah became king, it was only the 16th year when Azariah became king in 810 compared to 825. So for Jeroboam, year 1, 825, Azariah was king in 810. It's only 15 years, but there's a couple of ways of explaining that. It's just a problem, but here's Jeroboam in 826 or 825, and then we have Azariah, 810, for his year 1. But the 27th year could be seen in some way if you look at, if you add 26 years to 784, which is the date of the eclipse at the end of Jeroboam's reign. 784 and 26 is 710. So it's the 27th year before the end of Jeroboam's reign. So it is the 27th year of Jeroboam, counting from the end of his reign. It's interesting. Azariah, the son of Amaziah, the king of Judah, became king. 16, and he was called later, also Uzziah. That's his other name. Azariah and Uzziah are the same person. 16 years old he happened to be when he began to reign. And for 52 years he reigned in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Jechaliah of Jerusalem. And he continued to do what was upright in Jehovah's eyes according to all that Amaziah, his father, had done. It was only that the high places did not disappear. The people were still sacrificing and making sacrificial smoke on the high places. Finally, Jehovah plagued the king, and he continued to be a leper until the day of his death, and he kept dwelling in his house exempt from duties, while Jotham, the king's son, was over the house, judging the people of the land. And Jotham, here, we see, right. +1 years for Azariah. So Jotham very possibly ruled 1 year before the death of Azariah in 758, and that explains why the 52 years were given to Azariah. And Jotham only got 16 years to his credit, even though he reigned 1 year while his father was sick at the end of his father's reign. But I mean, that's the way we've accounted it in Moses Part 2. As for the rest, verse 6, of the affairs of Azariah and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the affairs of the days of the kings of Judah? That was King Uzziah, or Azariah. At length, Azariah lay down with his forefathers, and they buried him with his forefathers in the city of David. And Jotham, his son, began to reign in place of him. In the 38th year of Azariah, the king of Judah, right, 38 years after 810 would be 10 years, 28 years after 800 is 772. And where is he? There he is, Zechariah. 772 minus, he reigned for 6 months in 772 and 771 there. He was the son of Jeroboam, and he became king over Israel and Samaria for 6 months in verse 8 of 2 Kings 15. And he went on doing what was bad in Jehovah's eyes, just as his forefathers had done. And he started in the 38th year of Azariah. The chronology is good. He did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, with which he caused Israel to sin. Then Shalom, the son of Jabesh, conspired against him and struck him down at Ibleam and put him to death and began to reign in place of him. By the way, Mr. Oppert mentions the Bible is entirely correct in everything it says, except for the little, you know, copyist error that he found. But everything is correct that's said in the Bible. It's just that we don't have enough facts sometimes about what events really happen in order to understand what the Bible's saying. So he really believed that the Bible was accurate, even though he corrected it where it deserved correcting. He really believed the Bible was 100% accurate, and he was one of the very few who, of course, believe that. We are few, those of us who believe the Scripture as being inspired of God. And in the 38th year, Zechariah ruled for 6 months, as we said, and then Shalom struck him down, put him to death, and ruled in place of him. As for the rest of the affairs of Zechariah, there they are written in the book of the affairs of the days of the kings of Israel. That was Jehovah's word that he had spoken to Jehu, saying, sons themselves to the fourth generation will sit for you upon the throne of Israel. There was Jehu, Jehoahaz, Joash, Jeroboam. That was the order too, wasn't it? I think. And then Zechariah. They were all sons of Jehu. But it came to be this way. There were sons to the fourth generation. That prophecy that Jehovah gave to Jehu was correct. And as for Shalom, the son of Jabesh, he became king in the 39th. He wasn't the son of Jehu. He was the son of Jabesh. He became king in the 39th year of Uzziah, the king of Judah, and he continued to reign for a full month, so that would be 771 BCE. For a full lunar month in Samaria, he was king. Then Menahem, the son of Gadi, came up from Tirzah and came to Samaria and struck down Shalom, the son of Jabesh, in Samaria, and put him to death, and he began to reign in place of him. As for the rest of the affairs of Shalom and his conspiracy with which he conspired, there they are, written in the book of the affairs of the days of the kings of Israel. It was then that Menahem proceeded to strike down Tiphsah and all that was in it and its territory out from Tirzah, because it did not open up, and he went striking it down. All its pregnant women he ripped up, it says in the footnote, because they did not open up the gate to him. In the 39th year of Azariah, the king of Judah, Menahem, the son of Gadi, became king over Israel for 10 years in Samaria. And he continued to do what was bad in Jehovah's eyes. Moses Part 2, the table there. Menahem for 10 years right here, from 771 to 761. Shalom only ruled for one lunar month. And he continued to do what was bad in Jehovah's eyes, Menahem. He did not depart from all the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, with which he caused Israel to sin all his days. All his days did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam. Pul, the king of Assyria, and this is the king Pul that we think was the one that's missing from the Assyrian records, who ruled for 46 years or some number like that. So a large number of years that accounts for the discrepancies between the Bible and what some people say about the Assyrian records, but the Assyrian records are very fragmentary and they're not reliable, of course. But he's just called Pul here. Consequently, but many people say that they identify him as one of the other Assyrian kings. Consequently, Menahem gave Pul 1,000 talents of silver that his hands might prove to be with him to strengthen the kingdom in his own hand. So Menahem brought forth the silver at the expense of Israel. At the expense of Israel? At the expense of all the valiant, mighty men, to give to the king of Assyria 50 silver shekels for each man. At that, the king of Assyria turned back. See, it doesn't give him another name other than Pul. And he did not stay there in the land. As for the rest of the affairs of Menahem and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the affairs of the days of the kings of Israel? Finally, Menahem lay down with his forefathers, and Pekahiah, his son, began to reign in place of him. In the 50th year of Azariah, the king of Judah, Pekahiah, the son of Menahem, became king over Israel in Samaria for 2 years. And he continued to do what was bad in Jehovah's eyes. He did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam, the sons of Nebat, with which he caused Israel to sin. So here we see Pekahiah succeeds Menahem for 2 years, from 761 to 759. Then Pekah, the son of Remaliah, his adjutant, verse 25, conspired against him and struck him down in Samaria in the dwelling tower of the king's house with Argob and Ariah, and with him there were 50 men of the sons of Gilead. So he put him to death and began to reign in place of him. As for the rest of the affairs of Pekahiah and all that he did, Pekahiah, there they are written in the book of the affairs of the days of the kings of Israel. In the 52nd year of Azariah, the king of Judah, Pekah, the son of Remaliah, became king over Israel in Samaria for 20 years. Doesn't say those were the only 20 years that he ruled, though. Doesn't mention what Mr. Opert has said, is that Pekah became king again later after his reign was interrupted by a second person named Menahem. And he continued to do what was bad in Jehovah's eyes. The reason he assumed the second person named Menahem is that's why he deduced that this section was deleted from the Bible, was because it looked like a repeat, but it was a different person named Menahem, and that's how it happened that there's a section missing from the Bible, a short sentence or two. And so Pekah continued to do what was bad in Jehovah's eyes. He did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, with which he caused Israel to sin. In the days of Pekah, the king of Israel, Tiglath-Pileser, the king of Assyria. Some people think he is Pul, the person called Pul, because Pul just means the king, you know, of Assyria, typically, because this word P-I-L is the same as P-U-L in the Assyrian language. Tiglath-Pileser, the king of Assyria, came in and proceeded to take Ijon and Abel-Beth-Maacah and Genoa and Kedesh and Hazor and Gilead and Galilee, all the land of Naphtali, and to carry them into exile in Assyria. Finally, Hoshea, the son of Elah, formed a conspiracy against Pekah, the son of Remaliah, and struck him and put him to death. And he began to reign in place of him. Wasn't in the 20th year of Jotham, though. See, these words about the 20th year of Jotham originally preceded verse 30. And it really says that Jotham, when we look at that section in the letter of Mr. Oppert, it says at the end of the article here it is, it says this section originally preceded where is it? It's right near the, oh yeah, that's it. I just Yeah. In the year of the death of Jotham, probably this is what it said, son of Uzziah. And then it said, Menahem, the son of Pekahiah, rebelled against Pekah and reigned 9 years in Samaria. And in the 10th year, Pekah conspired against Menahem, son of Pekahiah, struck and killed him and reigned in his place. And Hoshea, the son of Elah, conspired against Pekah, the son of Remaliah, and smote him and slew him and reigned in his place. And that's probably what it says, is what he concludes based on his very intelligent observations there, that it's not the 20th year of Jotham. Can't be. It just doesn't make any sense. So, as for the rest of the affairs of Pekah and all that he did there, they are written in the book of the affairs of the days of the kings of Israel. In the second year, verse 32, of Pekah, the son of Remaliah, the king of Israel, Jotham, the son of Uzziah, the king of Judah, became king. 25 years old he happened to be when he began to reign, and for 16 years he reigned in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Jerusha, the daughter of Zadok, and he continued to do what was right in Jehovah's eyes. According to all that Uzziah his father had done, he did. It was only that the high places did not disappear. The people were still sacrificing and making sacrificial smoke on the high places. Moses part 2 again. So there's Jotham, and he precedes Ahaz, who precedes Hezekiah. And Hezekiah rules at the same time as Hoshea, the king of Israel. So it's all synchronized in our chronology very well. It's no problem. It was only that the high places did not disappear. 25 years old he happened to be when he began to reign, and for 16 years he reigned in Jerusalem. We talked about his mother, Jerusha, and his father was Uzziah, who was also called Azariah. It was only that the high places did not disappear. The people were still sacrificing on the high places. He it was that built the upper gate of the house of Jehovah. As for the rest of the affairs of Jotham, what he did, are they not written in the book of the affairs of the days of the kings of Judah? In those days, Jehovah started to send against Judah Rezin, the king of Syria, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah. Finally, Jotham lay down with his forefathers and was buried with his forefathers in the city of David, his forefather, and Ahaz, his son, began to reign in place of him. The people were still sacrificing and making sacrificial smoke upon the high places, verse 35. That's the end of 2 Kings 15. Ezekiel 39, and as regards you, O son of man, prophesy against Gog, and you must say, this is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. Here I am against you, O Gog, you head chieftain of Meshach and Tubal, and I will turn you around and lead you on and cause you to come up from the remotest parts of the earth, of the north, rather, the remotest parts of the north, and bring you in upon the mountains of Israel. And I will strike your bow out of your left hand, and your arrows I shall cause to fall out of your own right hand. On the mountains of Israel you will fall, you and all your bands and the peoples that will be with you, to birds of prey, birds of every sort of wing, and the wild beasts of the field I will give you for food. Upon the surface of the field you will fall, for I myself have spoken, is the utterance of the sovereign Lord Jehovah. And I will send fire upon Magog and upon those who are inhabiting the islands in security, and people will have to know that I am Jehovah, and my holy name I shall make known in the midst of my people Israel, and I shall no more let my holy name be profaned, and the nations will have to know that I am Jehovah, the Holy One, in Israel. Look, it must come and it must be brought to be, is the utterance of the sovereign Lord Jehovah. This is the day on which I have spoken. And the inhabitants of the cities of Israel will certainly go forth and burn and build fires with the armor and bucklers and large shields, with the bows and with the arrows and with the hand staves and with the lances. And with them they will have to light fires 7 years, and they will not carry sticks of wood from the field, nor will they gather firewood out of the forests. For with the armor they will light fires. You're going to light fires with armor, it's prophesied. And they will certainly make spoil of those who had been making spoil of them, and plunder those who had been plundering them, is the utterance of the sovereign Lord Jehovah. And it must occur in that day that I shall give to Gog a place there, a burial place in Israel, the valley of those passing through on the east of the sea, and it will be stopping up those passing through. And there they will have to bury Gog and all his crowd, and they will be certain to call it the Valley of Gog's Crowd. and those of the house of Israel will have to bury them for the purpose of cleansing the land for 7 months, and all the people of the land will have to do the burying, and it will certainly become for them a matter of fame in that day, that in the day that I glorify myself, is the utterance of the Sovereign Lord Jehovah. And there will be men for continual employment whom they will divide off, passing along through the land, burying with those passing through, those left remaining on the surface of the earth, in order to cleanse it. They will bury these ones left remaining. To the end of 7 months, they will keep making search, and those passing through must pass along through the land. And should one actually see the bone of a man, he must also build beside it a marker, until those who do the burying will have buried it in the valley of Gog's crowd. And the name of the city will also be Hamona. And they will have to cleanse the land. And as for you, O son of man, verse 17, this is what the Sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. Don't have much time left. Say to the birds of every sort of wing and to all the wild beasts of the field, collect yourselves together and come, gather yourselves together all around to my sacrifice, which I am sacrificing for you, a great sacrifice on the mountains of Israel. And you will certainly eat flesh and drink blood. The flesh of mighty ones you will eat, and the blood of the chieftains of the earth you will drink, rams, young male sheep, and he-goats, young bulls, the fatlings of Bashan, all of them. And you will be certain to eat fat to satisfaction, and to drink blood to drunkenness from my sacrifice that I will sacrifice for you, and you must get satisfied at my table on horses and charioteers, mighty persons, and all sorts of warriors, is the utterance of the Sovereign Lord Jehovah. And I will set my glory among the nations, and all the nations will have to see my judgment that I have executed and my hand that I have placed among them, and those of the house of Israel will have to know that I am Jehovah their God from that day and forward. And the nations will have to know that it was because of their error that they, the house of Israel, went into exile on account of the fact that they behaved unfaithfully toward me, so that I concealed my face from them and gave them into the hand of their adversaries, and they kept falling, all of them, by the sword, according to their uncleanness and according to the transgressions I did with them, and I kept concealing my face from them. Therefore, this is what the Sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. Now is when I shall bring back the captive ones of Jacob and actually have mercy upon all the house of Israel, and I will show exclusive devotion for my holy name, and they will have borne their humiliation and all their unfaithfulness with which they have acted toward me when they dwell on their soil in security with no one to make them tremble. When I bring them back from the peoples and I actually collect them together out of the lands of their enemies, I will also sanctify myself among them before the eyes of many nations, and they will have to know that I am Jehovah their God when I send them in exile to the nations and actually bring them together upon their soil, so that I shall leave none of them remaining there any longer, and I shall no longer conceal my face from them, because I will pour out my spirit upon the house of Israel, is the utterance of the Sovereign Lord Jehovah. So we just finished in time. I will pour out my spirit upon the house of Israel, is the utterance of the Sovereign Lord Jehovah. It's the end of Ezekiel 39. We were going to read a little more from 2 Peter or 1 Peter, but we don't have time. This is January 31st, 2024 of the Common Era. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. This is Liv Dusty on my behalf, and also Cassie saying bye for now.